Oh, hi, everybody. My name is Matt Storrs, and welcome to Mattsplaining. On today's episode, I have an expert on who I'm very excited to talk to. Expert, please introduce yourself and tell us what you're an expert in.
Hello, my name is Claire Lichtenstein. Thank you, Matt, for having me on. I am a comic as well as an expert in New York City real estate. I grew up in New York City, and my parents rented an apartment until I was 19 years old, if you can believe that. So my whole life, I got very familiar with looking into the industry, open houses as a little kid. There were many false starts where we almost bought a place, and I got randomly familiar with all the search engines that exist in New York for that reason. I've also been really fascinated by like the legal landscape of New York City real estate and real estate in general, like average real estate prices across the country, the fact that there are brokers in New York City for rentals. I don't know if you're familiar with the legal issue that happened back in 2019. So yeah, I could talk about this all day. So I'm really excited to be on.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you. I feel like I know a lot about New York City real estate because I've lived here for 5 years now. And I think all of it being in Astoria, and as Astoria, very hot, hot neighborhood, the exact boundaries of Astoria, not entirely clear, but that's partially because of the real estate market trying to create a little bit of mystery. Like, am I in Astoria? Am I in Long Island City? Or am I in Ridgewood? Or am I in Queens? Am I in Brooklyn? Or where exactly am I? And that's the beauty of New York City real estate, is that you can be in multiple neighborhoods at once in one listing, in one apartment. It can feel like you're in various different neighborhoods. And I think that a lot of people focus on the empty apartments. There's a lot of concern over the fact that there's hypothetically thousands and thousands of empty New York City apartments that people aren't using. But a lot of people don't know this, that the New York City Earth Room, the apartment, multi-million dollar apartment that's filled with dirt and occasionally gross mushrooms, there's actually a number of like sister art pieces to that one. So a lot of these empty apartments are actually, I don't want to say grow houses, because like they're not really like selling things. It's really just like you got to know the people. If you really get into the Earth Room groups and like the group chats, you get invited to these very selective art pieces throughout New York City.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. A lot of people thought, oh, this is just a pulled over from the 1980s art scene here in New York, but it's spun off, and you can find, there's an Earth Room in every borough now. And a lot of people focus on the odd layouts of apartments. There'll be a very common thing where the bathroom will be shared in the kitchen, but that's actually not a landlord or a designer trying to take advantage of an occupant or anything like that. That's actually going back to the 80s and 70s when Wall Street got really, really big. They thought there was going to be this kind of trend of people not wanting to leave the house and just being on the phone and doing their trades. And they're like, well, we don't have to give them as much space if there are these initial brokers trying to make their stock trades. And so that's kind of the justification they had to combine the kitchen and the bathroom, because you can get a lot of efficiency out of, oh, you're doing your business in the mornings, and then you're hopefully washing your hands. I can't speak to these people. I haven't had an apartment like this. But then also prepping your breakfast. And that way you can save that 30 seconds, and that could be $1 million deal that you're going to get. And then a lot of folks talk about the open house culture of New York, kind of the, you probably will know more about this than me, but I know that there's a whole subset of people, especially in their 30s and 40s, who are single, and that basically they'll go on their first, second dates just immediately going to open houses with their prospective partners. And you know that you can learn a lot about a person based on the type of questions they'll ask at those open houses. And you can really like parse through a lot of potential mates just by being at an open house with them and seeing how comfortable they are. And quite frankly, taking that free champagne, taking those free cookies, taken the same, which is whatever people decide to lay out. I've been to open houses myself here in New York where they laid out, what are those cookies called?
Madeline's? I could list cookies for days.
Oh, yes. I mean, it was an odd cookie. It was a very messy cookie. It probably was like a triple chocolate thing, very gooey cookie of some sort. It'll come to me, or maybe it won't. But anyway, based on what you've heard so far, about how much of that would you say was accurate?
Well, I think, okay, so, wow, I loved a lot of what you shared. I think, so let me run through it. I was taking some notes. The Earth Room, I've never heard of. Oh. I'm obsessed with that.
You should go see it. It is absolutely fantastic.
Yes. I'm not totally sure that they exist in every borough.
Okay.
Because I just did a quick Google. I think they're only in Manhattan, but I could be wrong on that. But I know very little about the Earth Room. I'm definitely going to check that out. The empty apartments thing is really interesting. So I have some insight there. Mm-hmm. It's another legal parameter. So in New York City, there's a lot of apartments that have legal requirements to be under a certain rent based on the market. And from what I understand, people have lived in these apartments since like the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, whatever. And so sadly, as people are getting older, those apartments are now freeing up. But as you can imagine, certain people have lived there for so long and it's like kind of falling apart. What I've heard is there's this law that's actually currently being discussed in the legal parameters of New York City that there may be an opportunity to take these apartments and up the rent to the current market rate. They might be reducing the amount required in these buildings. So because of that, all of these landlords that have to have these apartments marketed at a very, very cheap rate, I think it's technically called rent controlled. There's a difference between rent stabilized and rent controlled. Mm-hmm. All of these rent controlled apartments, they're keeping empty and not putting any work into because they're hopeful that the apartments won't need to be rent controlled in the next year or two. So they're just keeping them empty, which is why I've heard, the stat that I've heard is there's like thousands across the city that are just sitting empty, which has hurt a lot of people from a rent perspective, as you can imagine, because the demand is so high. And yeah, and the landlords don't want to invest thousands of dollars in making these apartments up to code and modern, because they're like, we can't charge that much for them anyways, until this law is processed potentially. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that is. I hadn't heard the detail that you provided there. It's usually when it's brought up, people will just cut it off at the landlord mentality of, oh, these landlords are just keeping them and holding them, not providing that extra, like the reasons and justifications why and what precipitated that from happening. Yeah.
I think what's frustrating though is like, I say it's exciting because it's like drama. You know what I mean? It's not exciting that the landlords might win yet again, it is kind of, it's a little bit, you could see a movie being made about it, you know, like the drama of it all. I want to understand more about like the lobby of like who, the landlord lobby. I feel like it's like a weird, creepy group. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I do feel, I mean, I don't know how much exposure you've had to lobbyists, but most lobbyists that I've had the pleasure of meeting have been a little bit creepy. There's like a little bit, there's a little bit of 1,000-yard stare, but like maintaining eye contact. They're seeing like your past lives and like evaluating you. That's very strange.
Yeah, I actually used to live in D.C. before I moved to New York. So I grew up in New York and then moved to D.C. after college for like 6.5 years and was very involved with friends of mine who were lobbyists, which is like crazy to think about. And obviously, I love my friends, but there was a drama around this concept of like the Scarlet L. Like when you're a lobbyist, you're seen as this evil person. And my one friend, he's amazing. He worked for the Trevor Project as a lobbyist, did a lot of cool things. The Trevor Project is an LGBTQ suicide charity. He actually, this is really random. I don't know if you heard of this law that's coming into place. They're coming up with a new 911 specifically for the National Suicide Hotline. Are you familiar?
I am not. No.
Yeah. And they worked on it with the Trevor Project, which is so cool.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, they're putting that into effect in the next 2 years, I think. But yeah, they got it passed by Congress and everything.
That's wonderful.
Anyways, he did have to do like, along with the social impact clients, some pretty fucked up clients by virtue of getting paid. I think he worked with one client that was like a wood shop tools manufacturer. And I remember he went to a meeting where I think it was a meeting with parents whose children's fingers had been cut off in workshop by these unsafe tools. So yeah, they're not really tasked with the most, I don't know, progressive issues a lot of the times. Lobbyists, gotta work for some bad people.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to lawyers and what have you, of like, well, this is my client and I have to do the best job that I can.
100%, 100%. But I feel for lobbyists, I don't know. I did want to get into, later we'll talk about my thoughts on like the broker lobby. I think it's really interesting, but shifting back, kitchen and bathroom in the same room. So the Wall Street thing is really interesting, but I'm going to challenge that. Because the majority of the kitchen and bathrooms in the same room, from what I understand, are from buildings that were pre-war.
Okay.
So it doesn't really align with understanding of the timeline of it all, you know?
Right. Okay. That seems reasonable. Talk a little bit about when you were younger, what got you most interested in real estate?
Oh, my poor mother. She's going to be sad to hear this if she listens. Love you, Mom. But when I was little, we were in this rental. I've lived in four apartments as a kid, like as a kid into young adulthood. I grew up my first year in life, Central Park West in 94th Street. Then I lived on 86 Upper West Side for about ages 1 to 12, I want to say. Then I moved ages 12 to 18 into another place. So three apartments, actually. And then I went to college. And then my parents bought a place when I was in college. But growing up, my parents were so rule follower-ish, and we lived in these really nice buildings with doormen and stuff. And my parents, I think unlike a lot of New York City parents who are more like cavalier, really followed all the renters' rules a lot. So we weren't allowed to really nail things into the walls. They never wanted to paint that much, change the white walls. And so even like putting posters on the wall, I remember having fights with my parents about it because they didn't want to like damage and like not get our rental deposit money back if we moved or something. And I remember feeling like such a little bratty kid when I'd go to my friends' places and they'd have their rooms all decorated and beautiful. And I think that was honestly the motivator for why at age 10, I was like, I think we should buy a place. It was like such a weird, New York City kids mature so early, but I remember that motivation specifically. Like I wanted the ability to design my room to make it fit what I wanted, you know? And I didn't like the idea that there were rules around it, if that makes sense. We also couldn't have like a certain type of pet because there were pet rules in the buildings for renters, you know? I just became very aware compared to other kids in my life who like could kind of do whatever they wanted. And I was like, wait, this is like stupid. I want to buy a place too. But now I look back, it's so bratty as a little kid, but that I think that was my main motivator. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I can understand that motivation and like the frustration of your parents trying to set a good example on some level and not wanting to break the rules and everything like that. But then the juxtaposition of you seeing what other people are getting away with and being like, well, we have a little bit more flexibility here. We don't have to be as rigid.
100%. And I think that I am also a bit of a rule follower. So instead of being like, hey, let's break some rules, in my head, I was like, here's a solution. Let's buy an apartment. I remember my poor mother, I would be like 10 years old. I'd print out like Corcoran listings for her. Like how annoying.
Yeah, that is. But if you do go into real estate, you have an amazing origin story of how you got there.
It's compulsive. Like to this day, I have no intention of moving. I check Street Easy every morning. Are you familiar with Street Easy?
I am, like, yes.
Yes, I check it every morning like a compulsion. It's nuts. I just need to know what's going on, what's out there. My dream is to get private outdoor space in life. That's my dream.
Oh, yeah. I mean, private outdoor space. I've had some places where, like, my first New York apartment, I had two balconies. And it was,
what?
I know, one of them barely a balcony. It was a triangle that there was a gnome on held over from the last people living there. And then the other one overlooked, was pretty big and overlooked a parking lot. And yeah, it was very, very nice and very lucky to have lived there. And on the back patio, it basically became just like a garden that I used. But eventually I kind of forgot that I had it because like you had to go through the entire whole apartment through the bedroom there. Then every other apartment was using theirs for storage. So you would look around the corner and there would just be like bikes and containers with a tarp over them. So it was just like, this could be a fun patio area, but it doesn't.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Oh, the last thing I'll say before I forget, I'm looking at my notes. You mentioned open houses as a date. Mm-hmm. First of all, love that. In DC, are you familiar with the town, like the neighborhood of Georgetown in DC? It's where the university is.
Yeah, I've been there before, yes.
It's basically like where all the richy riches live in DC. And me and my roommate used to sometimes on Sundays go to beautiful open houses and just like cosplay being rich. And so I can imagine as a date that being really fun. And it does remind me of this book that I read. You know the comic Aziz Ansari?
Yeah.
He wrote a book called Modern Romance, I think, with like sociologists about dating. And he has a theory called the monster truck rally theory, which is crazy. But it basically says that early on in a relationship, you can create more of a bond and understand more if you're actually going to like the person if you do something weird and radical and random on a date, like going to a monster truck rally or whatever. The open house kind of fits that bucket, I think.
Absolutely. I don't know. Absolutely. And I think that one of the things when I was dating a lot was it's very easy to go to something and do something that is one of you is comfortable with. And then but there's a kind of a power dynamic of like, oh, well, let me show you the thing that I like, as opposed to being like that, as opposed to going like, okay, so here's some random thing that I heard about. Do you want to go? I'm interested in it. What have you? And that is always a much better experience. Even if like the date doesn't work out, you've gone and you've done something you normally never would have done. And you have this new experience. And maybe you liked it, maybe you didn't, but maybe you bought a house with them. You never know. Like, it was just too good of a deal. And you're like, hey, listen, like, I don't know you. I've known you for 30 minutes, but like, this is too good of a deal to pass up. We gotta.
Fantastic. When you know, you know, you know.
Absolutely. You can overlook a lot of red flags in a relationship if the apartment is good.
I mean, similar point, two thoughts you brought up for me. One is, yes, I totally agree with the monster truck rally theory. I also think there's a point to be made about like, if you're going out to dinner or drinks, there's so much other data to compare to from other dates versus if you go to something random, it's a fun, unique experience. You can't grade the date against other ones. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You share a unique experience with the person as opposed to doing the, routine and standard thing.
But on the same token, I think what's interesting, what you just brought to my mind is this whole idea of so many of my friends have breakups and the rental market is so bad that they live with their partner for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a very New York thing.
Oh, absolutely. Claire, this has been absolutely wonderful. If people wanted to learn more about you or more about New York City real estate, where would you recommend that they go?
I would say my Instagram is probably the best place. C. Lichtenstein, spelled C-L-I-C-H-T-E-N-S-T-E-I-N. And you can DM me with questions. The last thing I'll say that I want to just talk about is the brokers thing. Mm-hmm. So back in 2020, brokers fees were gone for 3 months until the brokers lobby came in and fought it. Isn't that insane?
Can you
imagine what life would be if that had held?
Oh man, that would have been amazing.
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure we talked about that before the end. But I would love to chat about this at any time with anyone. And if you ever want to come to a cool variety show, you can follow Good Potential Productions on Instagram. We have a good time once a month.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's so wonderful. I really, really appreciate you coming on today and talking with me. This was great.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, talk to you soon. My name is Matt Storrs, and this has been Matt's Planning.
Before we go today, I want to thank Ryan Lawson, my dear friend and all around okay guy, for making the theme music for Matt's Planning. And if anyone needs music production or mixing services for any of their projects, Ryan can be reached at beatblenderstudios@gmail.com or at beatblenderstudios on Instagram and TikTok. And frankly, you should check him out on those apps just for the amazing music-related content. He makes some absolutely beautiful music, and you should definitely check him out. And one final thing before I let you go, I just want to thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you learned something, and I hope that you'll join us again next week when we'll have a brand new expert on talking about their area of expertise. My name is Matt Storrs, and this has been Matt Splaining.